good evening, Truth Seekers. Mike Malloy here. Thanks for tuning in tonight. I'll be off tomorrow. Brad Friedman will be filling in tomorrow evening from KTLK in Los Angeles. So play nice, all right? This hour is being sponsored by Jeff in Sydney, Australia. And his message, here's an admittedly late Earth Day observance for right-wing knuckleheads everywhere. From Home Planet, a coffee table book of NASA photographs accompanied by quotes from international astronauts. Quote, for the first time in my life, I saw the horizon as a curved line. It was accentuated by a thin seam of dark blue light. Obviously, this was not the ocean of air I had been told it was so many times in my life. I was terrified by its fragile appearance. Ulf Merbold, astronaut of the Federal Republic of Germany. He said that in 1983. Thank you, Jeff. In Sydney, Australia. The Senate today passed legislation that will renew the Violence Against Women Act for another 4 years. That doesn't mean it is now safely reauthorized, because the House, that cesspool of Republican teabagging snakes, still has to vote on the reauthorization. And of course, as you can imagine, the snakes have their own version. But in the Senate, the bill passed 68 to 31, which means 31 senators, all Republicans, voted no. We don't want to reauthorize the Violence Against Women Act. No. The Republicans who did vote with the Democrats in passing the bill were Alexander of Tennessee, Kelly Iode of New Hampshire, Scott Brown, Massachusetts, Susan Collins, Maine, Bob Corker, Tennessee, Dean Heller, Nevada, John Hovind, North Dakota, Kay Bailey Hutchinson, Texas, John McCain, Olympia Snowe, David Vitter, and Lisa Murkowski. Those were the Republicans. Marco Rubio, Marco Polo, whose name has been floated as a possible running mate for Mitt Romney. Wouldn't that be a pair? Mitt Romney and a teenager running for the executive branch of government? Marco Polo! Marco Polo voted against the bill. Rob Portman, a Republican of Ohio, whose name also has come up as a potential running mate, voted for the bill. Democrats, of course, as you can imagine, Democrats say that their passing the bill is a victory for women everywhere, because this year's renewal of the law that was passed, by the way, in 1994, includes new protections to protect specific groups. The bill increases the number of visas available to victims of domestic violence who are undocumented immigrants. The new bill bans discrimination against gay, lesbian, bisexual, and transgender victims of domestic violence. And it gives more authority to Native American tribes to address domestic violence. Now, of course, the Republicans don't want anything to do with any of those expansions of the Violence Against Women Act. Senator Patty Murray of Washington said today, like each time we've authorized this bill before, we passed a better Violence Against Women Act. Expanding coverage for domestic violence should never have been controversial. Where a person lives, who they love, and what their citizenship status may be should not determine whether or not their perpetrators are brought to justice. End quote. But, as you can imagine, Republicans in the House are the religious right Republicans, the teabag Republicans, the Christers, are saying, oh, no! Oh, no, 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 uh-uh. So Republicans are pushing their own significantly different bill. And they say they're not going to accept the one the Senate passed. Asked Wednesday about the Senate bill's provisions, as reported by Huffington Post, that protects immigrants who are maybe undocumented but are fleeing from spousal violence, or Native Americans, or the LGBT community. Representative Sandy Adams, Republican of Florida, and the sponsor of the House bill, said, we're not going to be looking at the controversial issues that would detract from what is actually VAWA. The controversial issues. This is what these rat bastards do. Because something has been made controversial by Republicans, by the right-wingers, by the Christian right, because it's been made controversial, they then adopt that as their fallback position. Well, we're not going to look at the controversial parts. We're just going to get out there and protect women. Nudge, nudge, wink, wink. Ha, ha, ha. Vice President Joe Biden, who was one of the sponsors of the bill when he was a senator, tried to define the measure as something beyond politics. He said, quote, the Senate's action today reaffirms that addressing this problem is bigger than politics. In 2012, we should be beyond questioning the need for the Violence Against Women Act, end quote. Well, that's true in more ways than one, Joe, but when you say addressing the problem is bigger than politics, I don't know who that's intended for, who that statement's intended for, because those of us who understand how filthy these Republicans, these right-wingers are, how vile and vicious they are, especially the Christians, know full well that it is not beyond politics. At all. It's not bigger than politics. It is politics. The Christian right in this country truly, honestly, deeply, positively, absolutely believes that women should shut up. Speak only when spoken to. If you get knocked around by your husband, it's probably because you deserved it. And don't even think about birth control or privacy when you visit your physician. This is what I'm not making this up. This is what the Christian right says. You think I'm just unloading on them because they're the Christian right? They're the ones who did this. I'm just pointing it out. Just pointing it out. Senator Patrick Leahy, the sponsor of the Democratic Violence Against Women Act bill, trashed the GOP proposal for stripping out protections for battered immigrants, Native Americans, and members of the LGBT community. You see, this is what the Republicans in the House are going to try to do. They're going to try to say, now, just a minute. We're not going to be protecting queers and so-called transgendered people and lesbians. Come on. However, we will pass legislation that allows them to carry a gun.
chills, used to get them. Now you're getting fucking sick of looking at them. You swore you'd never hit them, never do nothing to hurt them. Now you're in each other's face, spewing venom in your words when you spit them. Your boys pull each other's hair, scratch claws.
21 past the hour. Now, I want you to pay very close attention to what I'm going to say right now, because you need to be sitting down for this. I'm serious as a heart attack. I have been in this talk radio business for a long, 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 long time, and never have I come across a story like this. You talk about violence against women. Okay? No, I'm serious. I'm serious. Sit down. This comes from Ynet.com, which is published in Israel. It is, in fact, a reliable source. And doing a little research on the article, it's true. You talk about crazy Christians. Let me introduce you to some sick sons of bitches who call themselves Muslims. Egypt's Islamist-dominated parliament is considering a law. I don't know how to say this. I guess I should just say it. They're considering a law that will allow husbands to have sex with a dead wife up to 6 hours after death. Critics say this law highlights the trend of anti-woman legislation. 6 hours after death. The proposed law has sparked a lot of controversy, especially with Egypt's National Council for Women, which has been campaigning against the law, saying that it, quote, marginalizes and undermines the status of women and would negatively affect the country's human development, end quote. A law to allow men to have sex with their wives up to 6 hours after death. Now, these are some sick sons of bitches. I mean, this is perversion beyond belief. A religious authorization for necrophilia. Uh-huh. It's called the Farewell Intercourse Law. Yeah, that's what it's called. Dr. Mervat Al-Talawi, who's the head of the National Council for Women, has appealed against the law to the Egyptian People's Assembly Speaker, Dr. Saad Al-Kattani, on behalf of Egyptian women. Sex with your wife up to 6 hours after she's dead. 6 hours and 1 minute? No. I guess they get stiff. They get stiff right away. Sex with a corpse. Enshrined in Islamic government law. Sex with a corpse. Not any corpse. Your now dead wife. Other laws that are being considered call for the legal marriage age to be lowered to 14. And a proposal to abolish women's rights to education and employment. Now, this is a result of the so-called Arab Spring in Egypt. Here we go again. See, it doesn't matter if they're Christian or Orthodox Jews, although I don't think the Jews or the Christians will go this far. But the crazy Muslims now, these goddamn psychopaths now, are saying, well, you know, it's okay. You can have sex with her when she's dead. Nah, you can't go over 6 hours. This law further evoked criticism among Egyptian media people. Prominent journalist and TV host Jabel Al-Karmouti used his program to lash out at the proposed law. He said, quote, this is unbelievable. It is a catastrophe to give the husband such a right. Has the Islamic trend reached that far? Is there really a draft law in this regard? Are these people thinking in this manner? End quote. Now, this was not the first time Egyptians caught wind of the Farewell Intercourse Law. The law was first introduced in a fatwa Islamic law issued by a Moroccan cleric last year. Zamzami Abdul Bari said marriage remains valid even after death. He also said that women should have the right to have sex with their dead husbands. Jesus H. Christ. I mean, what is wrong with these people?
I think probably the most disturbing part of the story that you haven't brought up yet is that there are people out there who want to have sex with dead people.
Well, apparently they do.
Well, that's just it.
Apparently there are Muslim men who want to do the old lady after she's dead.
I mean, that's just creepy beyond words that there are men or women out there saying, you know, if I could just have sex with him when he's dead or when she's dead, it'd be okay. What?
This is religion.
But it doesn't sound like it's about religion. It sounds like
No, this is Islam. This is the Muslim religion. I don't know if it's in the Quran. I rather doubt it, just like a lot of what the Christians talk about is not in their Holy Bible. But, oh yeah. So, Arab Spring results in this.
I'm gonna tell you. Just like a ghost, you've been a haunting my dreams. Now I'll propose on Halloween. Love is kind of crazy with a spooky little girl like you. Spooky, spooky.
Redefining Anger Management, back to Mike Malloy.
Twenty-five before the hour, 31 senators voted no regarding the Violence Against Women Act renewal in this country today. 31 Republicans. And a proposed law in Egypt will allow sex with women after they're dead. Hold on a second, let me call hell. Hell, hello? Yeah, can I speak to Lord Satan? Oh, he's busy with who? Oh, Andrew. All right, I'll call back. I need to find out from Satan about whether or not this is a joke. Almost hate to mention this. This hour being sponsored by Jeff in Sydney, Australia. His message, here's an admittedly late Earth Day observance for right-wing knuckleheads everywhere. It's from Home Planet, a coffee table book of NASA photographs, accompanied by quotes from international astronauts. This one is from Ulf Merbold. I know I'm mispronouncing it. I understand. Don't give me the right pronunciation. It just looks like it's Ulf Merbold from the Federal Republic of Germany in 1983. This is what he said. Quote, for the first time in my life, I saw the horizon as a curved line. It was accentuated by a thin seam of dark blue light. Obviously, this was not the ocean of air that I had been told it was so many times in my life. I was terrified by its fragile appearance. Something to think about?
Nah. Think about it. That's just more of that liberal crapola, right? Let's get off the sex with dead people thing. You know, I kind of like that.
My God. So, you hear me go after these phony Christians all the time because that's the dominant force in this country and the Republicans and the evangelicals are never hesitant to tell us that this is a Christian nation. It started out that way. It is that way. It will remain that way until we all float naked up into the bosom of the Lord. They drag it into politics. They drag it everywhere. It's like dragging, a dead wife around behind you, I guess. They just keep doing it. So I will keep busting their asses by pointing out their hypocrisy, their idiocy, and the stupidity. But every once in a while, the Muslims or the Jews or the Hindus come up with something equally, or no. I have to say, this proposed Islamist law is so far. It's beyond talking snakes. It's beyond Noah. Well, of course, the Islamists believe all that stuff, too. I mean, this is really out there in the far reaches of what you could possibly classify as a religious fatwa. Or, is that redundant? As a fatwa. Sex with dead people. Only up to 6 hours. Can you imagine the discussion when they settled on the time limit?
I say 2 hours. No, I say four. Why two? Why four? How about six? How about a week? Now they start to stink.
Hold on. Hello, hell? Yeah, this is Malloy again. Is he still busy? All right. I'll try later. Now, meanwhile, these Islamist freaks are trying to determine how far after death a man can still boink his wife. Meanwhile, over in Wisconsin, Scott Walker, in addition to attacking the rights of working people to organize unions, and to speak up on their in their workplaces, he's attacked the rights of citizens to dissent, to have a voice in the legislative process. And as John Nichols writes at thenation.com, he has even attacked voting rights. The list of assaults of basic rights is so long that it's not surprising that close to a million Wisconsinites have petitioned for the recall and removal of Walker in this June 5th election. But then there's the matter of what the governor's critics refer to as Scott Walker's war on women. Because Walker signed anti-choice laws enacted by legislative Republicans, and again, I just wish the hell they'd stop calling it choice. It is anti-privacy laws enacted by legislative Republicans who do not believe women can or should make decisions regarding their own bodies. Now, you know where that goes. Eventually, it goes to there's no decision regarding their bodies after they're dead. And their husbands can still mount them. Because of this assault, Planned Parenthood of Wisconsin has decided to suspend providing certain basic health services to women. And according to John Nichols, Planned Parenthood, among other things, will stop providing drugs to women for abortions in the first 9 weeks of pregnancy. A method the provider says are used in about a quarter of the abortions it provides in Wisconsin. Why? Well, the law signed by Walker criminalizes a physician's failure to follow specific protocols laid out by the anti-choice or anti-privacy legislators that drafted the legislation. Specifically, well, let me back up. The Pro-Choice Wisconsin Executive Director, Lisa Subic, said, in just 1 year, we have seen how women can lose ground in their health care options as a result of who holds power. Specifically, she's referring to Act 217. That's a law that adds unnecessary and intrusive restrictions for abortion providers and forces or subjects physicians to felony criminal penalties. She says, Subic says, quote, it is unacceptable that women in Wisconsin are losing health care options because Governor Walker has enacted a law that is hostile to abortion providers. And that means women in Wisconsin will suffer. This is what happens when out-of-control politicians like Walker practice medicine without a license and interfere in the relationship between doctors and their patients. In the end, it is women who lose out, end quote. And she's right. State Representative Chris Taylor says, Quote, this is indicative of what is to come from Scott Walker and legislative Republicans. It will stop at nothing to make abortion and birth control illegal in every circumstance, end quote. So today, in this country, the Christian right wants to take away, and they almost have, a woman's right to privacy where it concerns these kinds of critical decisions. And secondly, they want to take away pregnancy prevention methods, pregnancy control. I wish, I wish people could learn to use language that has meaning. We're not talking birth control. That's not what the pill is about. The pill is about pregnancy control. The IUD is about pregnancy control. A condom is about pregnancy control. A sponge is about pregnancy control. It is not birth control. It is pregnancy control. And it's not a choice. It's privacy. Why not call it what it is, people? Pregnancy control. Say that after me. Pregnancy control. But you see, the right wing, when they come up with the memes that everybody picks up on, when you say birth control, they're going to stop a birth. What happens? What happens? Does the little fetus get crushed? Ooh. Why don't you call it what it is? Pregnancy control. A woman's right to privacy. Am I wrong? Wasn't Roe v. Wade about a woman's right to privacy? Around the issue of abortion, yes, but a woman's right to privacy? Did the Supreme Court ever say, we hold that women have a constitutional right to have an abortion? No! Did the Supreme Court ever say, we have determined that there shall never be prayer in school again? No! They did not! But this is how it's been spun. These are the memes. This is what the right wing has done. And nobody on the left ever sticks their head up out of their ass and says, wait a minute, that's not the way it should be framed. Because that is a corruption of language. It is pregnancy control, not birth control. Abortion is birth control. My 37 listeners already know this. All right, let's take a break.
Mini skirts, hot pants, and a few little fancy frills. Yeah, I'm making it for all those years since I've got the pill. I'm tired of all your crowing, how you and your hens play. Why holding a couple in my arms, another.
This hour has been sponsored by Jeff in Sydney, Australia, and his message is as follows. Here's an admittedly late Earth Day observance for right-wing knuckleheads everywhere. From Home Planet, a coffee table book of NASA photographs accompanied by quotes from international astronauts. This quote is from Ulf Merbold, astronaut, in 1983. He was an astronaut from the Federal Republic of Germany. And that was West Germany, I'm sure you remember. This is what he said, quote, "For the first time in my life, I saw the horizon as a curved line. It was accentuated by a thin seam of dark blue light. Obviously, this was not the ocean of air that I'd been told it was so many times in my life. I was terrified by its fragile appearance." Thanks, Jeff. In Sydney, Australia. General Electric had a share, is having a shareholders meeting in Detroit. And at the meeting today, about two dozen protesters who were chanting, "Pay your fair share," were forced out of GE's annual meeting at the Detroit Marriott Renaissance Center. GE CEO Jeff Immelt, and I think he's still chairman of Barack Obama's Jobs Council. isn't that wonderful? Jeff Immelt, GE, that has eliminated how many hundreds of thousands, if not billions, of jobs in this country and sent them someplace else. GE that doesn't pay any taxes, corporate taxes, corporate income taxes. Okay, okay, okay. So they pay payroll taxes. They pay sales taxes. Okay, 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 okay. We're talking about corporate income tax. And anytime somebody says GE doesn't pay any taxes, GE is quick to say, "Oh, yeah, we do." You got to be specific. You got to be specific. It's not a woman's right to make a choice. It's a woman's right to privacy. It's not birth control. It is pregnancy control. Now, I understand birth control pills can be used for other things, regulating a woman's menstrual cycle, like all sorts of things, hormonal balance, postmenopausal, on and on and on and on. I'm talking about the specific use of the pill as a means of pregnancy control, along with other means for men as well as women. But they're not birth control devices. They're pregnancy control devices. I already did all that. The chant, as soon as Jeff Immelt had opened the meeting with several hundred shareholders in attendance, the protesters stood up and began chanting. And the chant referred to reports that GE paid no income, no corporate income taxes in a number of years due to various tax breaks. Once the protesters had been bum-rushed out, Immelt resumed the meeting. He told the audience, quote, "We're happy we brought jobs here. We are proud to be in Detroit this morning," end quote. Of course, that wasn't the issue, you capitalist son of a bitch. The issue is whether or not you are paying your fair share, your corporation. You know what is funny, and this is the right-wingers talk about this all the time, that corporate income taxes are set at 35%, which is higher than most countries. They never pay 35%. Most of the sons of bitches pay nothing and get refunds. And, you know, the right-wingers talk about the what is it? The tax credit for people whose incomes who don't pay taxes, the earned income tax credit that goes to poor folk, people who are not making money, very much money, and trying to survive, and they get an earned income tax credit that sometimes can amount to $2,000 or $3,000. It can be a lifesaver. And the right wing is constantly belching and screaming and farting and yelping and burping about that one, right? But let GE use every single filthy tax loophole, most of which they wrote, they and their capitalist buddies, use every tax loophole they can to get just to weasel out like a bunch of worms, like a squirming box of fishing worms, just squeeging around trying to get away from the hook. Oh, no, you're not going to hook me. No. GE Vice Chair and Chief Financial Officer Keith Sharon addressed the tax issue during his remarks to shareholders. He said that GE complied with tax laws all over the world, wherever it does business. He said GE paid $2.6 billion in taxes in the United States last year. $2.6 billion. No. Hey, halfwit, that's not the argument. That's not the charge. The charge is you don't pay, you and your filthy company, you do not pay corporate income taxes. Oh, but we paid $2.6 billion in taxes. No. Income. Can you not hear? Income taxes. What? I can't hear you. He said, we are a large taxpayer. We pay our taxes. No, you don't. The first speaker during the shareholder comment section told ML that GE had, quote, violated the public trust, end quote, in a variety of ways. Another ML identified the speaker as Tom Borelli. Another shareholder speaker, Deneen Borelli, who is Tom's spouse, accused GE of, quote, crony capitalism, end quote, and asked Immelt if GE supported the introduction of new high-efficiency light bulbs. Now, after these people were bums rushed out, obviously they were shareholders. They wouldn't have gotten in. And Immelt conceded that, oh, yeah, well, they're shareholders, but, you know, sometimes these people, they'll buy a few shares just so they can come in and raise hell. We're a good company. Why, I'm President Obama's chief executive where it concerns job creation in this country. You didn't know that? Oh, yes, I do that. Yes, I do. We'll be back after the break. I'm going to try another call to hell. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. It is 7 past the hour. General Electric paid no federal taxes in 2010 or 2009 or probably 2008. It looks like they're not going to pay any this year. So you have to wonder if with all those billions that GE made in profit last year, should Jeff Immelt, the CEO of General Electric, be advising Barack Obama on business?
Oh, he's a socialist. You know, he's a communist. And he's from Kenya. Yeah, he is. He is.
For a couple of years now, Obama has been talking about the need for corporate tax reform. And for those accustomed to the loopholes and shelters of the corporate tax code, the success that General Electric and a lot of these capitalist organizations have at avoiding taxes is nothing short of extraordinary. In 2010, GE earned $14.2 billion in profit. Now, I can't say after tax profit because they didn't pay any tax, income tax. It paid not a penny in income tax because the bulk of those profits, some $9 billion, were offshore. In fact, GE in 2010 got a $3.2 billion tax benefit. Now tell me, does that sound right? Not you brain-dead right-wingers. You couldn't find your ass with both hands and a compass. I'm talking about normal people. Does that sound right? Does that sound right? In a statement, GE said that, quote, it pays what it owes under the law and is scrupulous about its compliance with tax obligations in all jurisdictions. Yeah, you are. You're just scrupulous. You know what that means? It means you hire tax attorneys who use a one of those little knit combs. You know what I talk about? Those little combs that you have to use on your kid if your kid gets head lice. Whew. And, you know, you get a note home from school. They haven't had it at Molly's school this year, but they've had it before. I remember when Chris was a kid, when he was like in third grade, note comes home. Your child has been exposed to head lice. Here's what you do. Well, you know, the first time it happened to me, I freaked out and I went and got one of those, I went to the drugstore and got one of those little combs. That's the kind of comb that, GE's tax attorneys use. They drag that comb through the tax law and get all the nits out of there. Just zzz, zzz. And as a result of getting all those nits out, they don't pay any income tax. Nothing. Michael in Roswell says, I doubt that GE pays much in sales taxes. Most states exempt businesses from paying sales taxes on supplies or materials and sub-assemblies at the manufacturing and wholesale levels. As for that $2.6 billion in taxes they do pay, I bet that a healthy percentage of that is GE's share of payroll taxes, with the remainder in property taxes of its various installations around the country. And that $2.6 billion represents only about 0.4% of revenue and perhaps 4% of profit. Well, you know, capitalism is not supposed to, capitalist enterprises are not supposed to pay taxes. They're not supposed to pay wages. They're not supposed to contribute anything. They're supposed to exploit and take. This is the foundational purpose of capitalism. Take as much as you can until the system from which you are taking collapses, whether that system is the worker's structure or the environmental structure or the business structure or the company who you are ripping off, but because you are not contributing anything. Capitalism says take everything you can. Strip the apartment. Take the furniture, the carpets, get the light fixtures, the switch plates, the faucets, the toilets, everything. Strip it. Take it all. And GE is an exemplar. GE is a company that other companies point to and go, God damn, I wish I could be like them. Now, I understand that a couple of publications are saying the Islamic necrophilia law, or what is it called? The what I call it, Kathy? The sex with your wife thing. That it's a fake story. It's coming out of Egypt. The story is that, oh, well, no, we're not really planning that. Wink, wink, nudge, nudge. The some of Mubarak's people, they're planting fake stories. No, I'm sorry. That's not the case. Christian Science Monitor, Christian Science Monitor, a newspaper that I respect a lot, calls the story, their word, hooey. Hooey? That story is hooey! And in their rebuttal, they say, such a bill like this has zero chance of becoming law. Notice the wording. A bill like this has zero chance of becoming law. So all I said was, in all the article from Ynet and from the Egyptian press, from the Middle Eastern press, all I said was, and this is all that any of them are saying, is that this law is being proposed. And it is. Farewell intercourse, is that what it's called, the farewell intercourse? From a listener. Two things come to mind regarding the issue of having sex with deceased spouses. First, ancient Egyptian mythology has the story of Isis, who had sex with her dead husband Osiris and conceived Horus, in whose stead the pharaohs ruled. Second, most Egyptian women, and also many Arab, African, and Muslim women, are circumcised, so to speak. Their clitorises are excised. So if you have sex with your dead wife, how can you tell the difference? Sorry, but that had to be said. Yeah, the clitorectomies. Again, you know, the treatment of women, to me, it's I only focus on the Christian crazy people because that's where I live. I live in the middle of a vast sea of Christian crazy people. If I lived in a vast sea of Islamic crazy people, I'd probably be dead because, you know, they would say, "Get Malloy!" Well, bring it on. But this is madness. I mean, this is beyond madness. To actually debate, to even consider. I mean, female circumcision, think about it for, I hate that word, female clitorectomies. Think of that. I mean, what is the point of that? The point is very strictly because, you know, women, they have this little magic button, and if we don't take it away from them, why? They might get the sheep herder down the road to come and have sex with, because, you know, they're insatiable! Right? Well, there's one way to fix that. First of all, drape them in what looks like a grill cover with a screen mesh so they can peek out and see this filthy society that their Islamic men have created. And secondly, remove their clitorises. Oh, that's easy. Here, hold still. Man. I wonder how long before the Christian crazies in this country will be suggesting the same thing. Can't be far away. I mean, don't forget, the Muslims, the Christians, and the Jews, they all have the same Abrahamic sets of laws and commandments and creation mythologies. They all do. They all share it, right? So, you know, how soon before there's a bleed through, you'll pardon the expression.
Think you're gonna feel you belong. Nocturnal vacation, unnecessary sedation. Inside you're gonna feel right at home. Welcome to my nightmare, yeah. Welcome to my breakdown. I hope I didn't scare you. That's just the way we are.
It's about 22 past the hour. Michael in Roswell says, would it be too much to join your two major stories tonight and say that the proposed Egyptian law is a metaphor for what GE intends to do to the country after starving it to death? Ow! No, that wouldn't be too much of a stretch at all. Meanwhile, while all of this is going on, the Pope, Benedict, has decided that there are too many leaks coming out of the Vatican. I don't mean the plumbing. I mean embarrassing letters about corruption and nepotism inside the Vatican, the little city-state there sitting in Rome. And so Pope Benedict, drawing on his Nazi past, has hired has hired a squad of cardinals. Think about that for a second. A squad of cardinals. According to the Guardian of the UK, a squad of cardinals led by a senior member of the religious group Opus Dei. Opus Dei. So a crack squad of cardinals, or a squad of crack cardinals, or a cardinal crack squad, or something. It's a crack squad. Well, you try saying it. What has happened is the Pope is irritated by the anonymous release of documents to the press this year. So Benedict has named Cardinal Julian Herranz, who is 82, to lead a three-man team. Can you see this? They're skulking through the Vatican, right? With their robes up, you know, across their arm and over their nose and mouth. They're going, oh, is it over here? No, is it over here? Skulking! Skulking! A three-man team which will haul in staffers for questioning and rifle through files until they catch the perps of what has been dubbed, of course, Vatileaks. It's funny they haven't called it Vatican Gate. Vatileaks! A short statement printed printed today on the front page of the Vatican's daily newspaper warned that the team has, quote, a full pontifical mandate to shed complete light on the whistleblowers who have lifted the lid on alleged theft and false accounting. No! Really? Theft? Theft? The Catholic Church? Hierarchy? I'm afraid you're going to have to go back about 1600 years. Start there. And work your way forward. You think? Now, this guy Herranz, Cardinal Julian Herranz, according to the Guardian of the UK, was a longtime personal secretary to Jose Maria Escrivá, the now canonized founder of Opus Dei. Escrivá and Opus Dei had been accused of excessive secrecy, strict control over members, undue influence within the Vatican, whips, chains, buckles, hot coals, knives, scrapings, teeth marks, and molested children. One of the two cardinals who are members of the group has insisted that Opus Dei has no hidden agenda. We have no hidden agenda. What could it be? We don't. There's nothing. What agenda would we have? We are just trying to find out who's telling the truth on the Catholic bookkeeping, shall we say? There's no agenda. We just want to find them. And when we do, when we find these whistleblowers, well, we have ways of handling this that were perfected in the 15th century in Spain, as a matter of fact. Can you believe this? The Pope is trying to plug leaks. Nixon tried that. Called it the plumbers. And the Pope has put together a crack squad of cardinals. A squad of crack cardinals. A cardinal crack squad. A squad! Three of them! Led by an 82-year-old man who is beyond insane!
Oh, he just had another cup of coffee. Here's Mike Malloy.
25 before the hour. Yeah, I'm not here to let the Orthodox Jews off the hook either, especially in Israel. They can't get, they don't try this in other countries, of course, but in Israel, the super Orthodox are making life for women there just hell. I mean, just introducing laws that are very similar to the laws that pertain to black folk in the southern United States after Reconstruction. You know, all the way up to the 50s. And the Orthodox Jews are doing it. It's not that they have to ride in the back of the bus, the women. They can't get on a bus where there are men. God forbid that a man should see a woman. And there's much more to it than that. I'll do a little research on that one, and we'll discuss the craziness of Orthodox Judaism at some point. But back to this Pope thing, back to the Vatican thing. This is really strange. So Pope Benedict has named Cardinal Julian Herranz to lead a three-man squad of cardinals. I mean, that in itself is just hysterically funny. I hope the Daily Show gets a hold of this or somebody. Herranz's squad, according to the Guardian UK, which met for the first time this week, is just one of three inquiries underway now at the Holy See into the leak of letters in January and February that discuss the mysterious kidnapping of Emanuela Orlandi. Emanuela Orlandi, the daughter of a Vatican employee in 1983. The letters also discuss, get this, the likely date of Pope Benedict's death. Really? And an internal row over just how transparent the Vatican Bank should be as it tries to shrug off allegations of money laundering. So what do we have here? Kidnapping of a young woman 30-some years ago. The likely date of Benedict's death? Do they plan that? So, are we to believe that Dan Brown and the Da Vinci Code, you know how it was mocked and said, no, that's just a bunch of stupid horse hockey. Was it? The most shocking revelations are in a letter addressed to the Vatican Secretary of State by Archbishop Carlo Maria Vigano, the deputy governor of Vatican City, denouncing the signing by employees of inflated contracts with friendly companies as proof. Vigano said he had discovered... sit down. I'll wait. Are you sitting? Okay. Archbishop, the Secretary of State, Archbishop Carlo Maria Vigano, has discovered that the price of the Christmas nativity scene in St. Peter's Square was 250,000 euros more than it should have been. Oh, no. One priest, who Vigano describes as vulgar and arrogant, has been responsible for nepotism, fake invoicing, and 70,000 euros going missing, Vigano claims. After telling all, Vigano was reassigned to the U.S. as papal nuncio, an appointment he describes as punishment for his honesty in a plaintive letter to Pope Benedict, in which he begs for a commission to look into his claims. Since then, the Vatican has instead focused on finding out who leaked the letters. Of course. Now, while the papal nuncio is here, Vigano, he will meet with Fat Tony Scalia and Sammy the Fish Alito as they sit around and figure out ways to further pimp their religion in the United States. Gianluigi Nuzzi, Gianluigi Nuzzi, the Italian journalist who first broadcast the contents of the Vigano letters, said, quote, I hope the Vatican employs the same tenacity in improving transparency at its bank and in reopening the Orlandi kidnapping case as it has with this inquiry. At that point, he curled up the ends of his mustache. Now, just a little bit more here. Why am I doing this? Because I find it just fascinating. That's why. If you want to go listen to MSNBC about all this political horse hockey, go ahead. Go ahead. Meanwhile, back here with I and my 38 listeners, we will have further fun and frivolity. So there. Now, Herranz, Cardinal Julian Herranz, 82-year-old guy who's put together the three-man squad. How do you select a squad when you work in Vatican City? How do you, what do you do? How do you do this? 82-year-old guy. All right, I need some volunteers. Everybody take one step forward. You know, two guys step forward. All right, let's go. Herranz has been called in by the Pope before to, you'll pardon the expression, snuff out trouble at the Vatican. In 2007, he oversaw the suspension of a senior Vatican cleric who was secretly filmed telling a young man that the young man, was hot and that homosexual sex was not sinful. Well, of course it's not. But you're not supposed to say that in the Vatican. You are so very hot. I like your eyes. I like the cut of your jib. I like so much about you. I like your tight pants. I like these little boots you have on. This is magnifico. Magnifico. Si. You are so hot. Homosexual sex. That is not sinful. Who says it's sinful? Who says that? Who says this is sinful? A pox on him, her, it. Come. Let's go do a confession. Woo, let's take communion. Anyway, the Guardian goes on. Any employees now nabbed by Cardinal Herranz and his team in the probe, so to speak, could be fired or face canonical punishment if they are clerics. Uh-oh, canonical punishment. Oh, my God. What is that? Drawn and quartered? Iron Maiden? The pit and the pendulum? What? But to track them down, the three detectives, the three tenors, as they were dubbed detectives by Italian newspapers today, the three detectives must penetrate the secretive world of the Vatican's bureaucracy, a task that Il Messaggero warned could turn out to be a mission impossible. I don't make this stuff up. I'm just, you know, just sitting here reading the stuff in The Guardian UK. My God. Opus Dei. Jose Maria Escriva. And these names. These names. Carlo Maria Vigano. And Gianluigi Nuzzi. And Messaggero, and all of these names. They're taking money for the nativity scene. And it's not just any nativity scene in somebody's public square, you know, run by the courthouse. It is the nativity scene in St. Peter's Square. Man, oh man, oh man, oh man. This is great stuff. I mean, why worry about global warming? Why worry about, you know, little neo-Nazi geek bastards in this country who are destroying the country when you have this? I mean, the Vatican City. Oh my God, how big is Vatican City? About the size of your kitchen? I mean, how big is it, right? It's got St. Peter's, but, you know, how big is it? All this intrigue. I guess when you have all these people running around in red robes, all these men running around in red robes and these little funny hats and, you know, God knows what they have on under those robes, if anything. You know, when you have all that going on, yes, somebody's going to start squealing. Somebody is going to commit fraud. Somebody is going to steal money that should go to the nativity scene. Somebody's going to do this and that and the other thing. And it has to be found out. We must know the truth. I love it. I love it. Man. I love it. I wonder what Fat Tony Scalia and Sammy the Fish Alito, who are supposed to be considering really important, and you know, Uncle Clarence, supposed to be considering real important stuff tonight, you know, right? And they're picking up a copy of La Observatoire, and they're looking in the paper, and they're seeing this, and they're seeing that, and they're seeing this over here, and that over there, and this cardinal, and that cardinal, and this and that. Oh, my God. Oh, my God. Dominus Vobiscum!
Bring up your heart, a standing cane, a sun star. And it's so easy when you're evil. This ain't the life you see, the devil tips his head to me. I do it all because I'm evil. And I do it all for free. Your tears are all the pay I'll ever need.
Keep crying for you. Keep crying for you. Keep lying for you. Keep
The Mike Malloy Show. Talk radio matters here.
Nine before the hour, one of the stories that I saw last week, actually it was about 10 days ago, and it really, you know, raised a lot of red flags. At first I thought, oh God, if that's true. And that was a story that was put out there for world consumption by Telemundo, I think. I think it was Telemundo. That said that the country of Iceland was forgiving nearly all of its citizens' mortgage debt. The report implied that the cancellation of debt was done as a sort of punishment for the casino-like fiscal policies of the banks. And the report that was put out there by I think it was Telemundo, maybe not, but it was a Spanish language news organization. The context of the report implied that the cancellation was done as a sort of punishment for the policies of the banks. And the report lauds the actions of the Iceland government as, quote, a very different way from the one chosen by the rest of Europe to overcome the crisis, end quote. Yeah, different for sure. And actually, it's not true. There is a more accurate report that says the International Monetary Fund says targeted debt reduction policies can work. In the case of Iceland, the situation was more difficult due in part to the much bigger proportion of the population that was affected and to the wide presence of foreign currency mortgages. The government and the newly constructed Icelandic banks developed a template to be used in case-by-case restructuring discussions between borrowers and lenders. The templates facilitated substantial debt write-downs designed to align secured debt with the supporting collateral. In other words, bring the loan down to in line with the value of the house. The IMF found that such case-by-case negotiations safeguard property rights and reduce moral hazard, but they take time. As of January of this year, 35% of the case-by-case restructuring applications had been processed. To speed things up, Iceland has introduced a debt forgiveness plan which writes down deeply underwater mortgages to 110% of the household's pledgeable assets. So, the story is partly true, but it's enough partly true to be revolutionary. Iceland said to the capitalist gamblers, okay, you went too far. You went too far, and damn near everybody in this country is going to go bankrupt. So we're going to do something. Wouldn't that be something if if the Obama organization were to do something like this? Wouldn't it be nice? How many millions of American families are either have been tossed into the street, about to be tossed in the street, living with relatives, living in their cars, living in shelters, living in goddamn parks because of these predatory banks? Wouldn't it be nice if Jeffrey Immelt, the head of CEO that made billions of dollars in profit last year and paid not a dime in corporate income tax, if Immelt said to Obama, hey, listen, why don't we do this? We'll cover for you, Mr. President. We'll take care of the white people. We'll take care of the capitalists. We'll take care of the bankers. And you can get reelected, and then we can continue to steal America blind. But why don't you do this? Tell them we're going to mark everything. We're going to market it. We're going to do the Iceland model. In a pig's eye, that'll happen. Well, anyway, it was a nice story. When I first saw it, I thought, well, wow, that is really something. Because Iceland and Ireland, this is strictly the way for both of those countries to go, maybe Greece also, those three countries especially. But when I saw this story, I said, what? They're forgiving the entire mortgage debt of every homeowner? Okay, granted, there's not that many people in Iceland. But even so, what's the population of Iceland? It's not a million, is it? I don't think it is. But it turns out the story is simply not factual. It has enough truth to it, though, to make it enviable, especially in this country or in European countries. But it is not as true as when you first read the story, you would hope it would be. Or I, at least I did when I read it. You know, I saw it. Thought, what? Oh, man, this is great. Sorry. Sorry, Mike. Rug pulled out from under you again, huh, Mr. Malloy? Right? You thought, oh, okay. What do you find now? The story about the Vatican is not untrue. What do we got here for the next hour? Oh, no, you're kidding me. What is it? What do my notes say? Republican sickness, Catholic insanity. Oh, this is about the teacher in Indiana who was fired because she used in vitro fertilization to try to get pregnant. And her Catholic school fired her. And the pastor told her that she was a grave immoral sinner. Oh, God. It just never stops. All right, stick around. We'll be right back. Welcome back. 7 past the hour. This hour is being sponsored by Alexandra Marin. Thank you, Alexandra. Her message, I proudly sponsor this to honor the incredible king of the truth seekers, Mike Malloy. Well, that's very nice, Alexandra. Thank you. Thank you very much. Alexandra, I proudly sponsor this show to honor the incredible king of the truth seekers. Well, prince maybe, but I don't know about king. But I'll take it. I'll take it. A couple of comments from last night's program from Roz in Canada. Wednesday night is church night. In recognition of all those Wednesday nights I spent in prayer meeting. But Roz writes, Mike, of all the religions, the only leader who was not anti-woman was Jesus. Forget the whole religion thing and the formal structures of the church. All of them. Jesus' words have the ring of truth about them. Just reading the Beatitudes is a moving experience. It preaches simply love and fairness in all things, and nothing else. Nobody has to buy the whole religion thing, but it's hard to deny the lessons to be found in his parables, Roz. That's very true. That is absolutely true. And a lot of people question the historic life of the man called Jesus, this rabbi, this carpenter, 2,000 years ago. I don't. I know a lot of people say, well, yeah, it's just all made up. No, I think there was a guy named Jesus. I really do, whatever his name was. And I think he had a profound effect on the people around him. Do I think he was a god? No, of course not. Do I think Gandhi was a god? No. Do I think Martin Luther King was a god? No. You know, all these people who have tried to preach, and preach is the right word, a message of peace and hope and love and compassion and take care of your brother, take care of your sister, yada, yada, yada. But Ross is absolutely right. Just think of all the religious leaders. Other than Jesus, they were all anti-woman, weren't they? In one way or another. I mean, Muhammad had how many wives and girlfriends and concubines? The ancient Hebrews, how many wives and concubines and slaves? And, yeah, you know, come on, 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 come on. Thanks, Roz. Good point. And from Prairie 2, left over from last night about Republicans, the Republicans haven't changed since 1870-something, Prairie 2 writes. Ever since the railroad barons captured the liberal Republican Party of Abraham Lincoln and twisted it to its ends, they have not changed one bit. After being driven from Congress in the early 30s, they simply adopted a public persona completely opposite of their true nature. There have been so-called good Republicans like Teddy Roosevelt and Eisenhower, but they were reformers and not the party. They only got elected by appealing to the sane part of the electorate. Today's Republicans only differ in that they don't hide. When you turn on the kitchen lights, the cockroaches don't scurry under the fridge. They flip you off. We have pine roaches around here the size of a mouse that are nearly indestructible. But you stomp on them a few times, and they still squash. That's Prairie 2, our etymologist, or is it entomologist? I guess it's entomologist. Okay. The news earlier today, as I read it, was that Charles Taylor, the former president of Liberia, has been found guilty at The Hague International Tribunal there on 11 counts of aiding and abetting war crimes committed in Sierra Leone during that country's civil war in the 1990s. Charles Taylor. The ruling announced by the presiding judge said Charles Taylor was guilty of involvement in crimes against humanity and war crimes, including rape, murder, slavery, and the use of child soldiers. The court, however, said the prosecution failed to prove that Mr. Taylor had direct command responsibility for the atrocities in the indictment. Mr. Taylor will be sentenced in the coming weeks. There's no death penalty in international criminal law. Any jail term would be served in a British prison. Now, according to the Times, this is where this report came from, and I'm sure you remember, the conflict in Sierra Leone became notorious because of its gruesome tactics, including, you may not want to hear this, the calculated mutilation of thousands of civilians, the widespread use of drugged child soldiers, and the mining of diamonds to pay for guns and ammunition, blood diamonds, they were called. Remember? Blood diamonds, remember? Remember the advertising campaign that the diamond industry tried to put out there? They got a bunch of stars and say, well, I don't, you know, not me. No, no, Hog's not. One of the real atrocities of Charles Taylor's attack against his own people was the vocabulary that developed. Gruesome, hideous, horrible vocabulary. For example, applying a smile to someone meant cutting off the upper and lower lips of a victim. Giving long sleeves meant hacking off the hands. Giving short sleeves meant cutting the arms off above the elbow. Huh? A group in Freetown, Liberia, the Center for Accountability and the Rule of Law, said that the verdict brought a sense of relief. Spokesman for that group, Ibrahim Tommy, said, but I'm not sure it will bring closure to the victims. Even so, Mr. Tommy said, the trial was, quote, a genuine effort to ensure accountability for the crimes in Sierra Leone. In Liberia, Mr. Taylor's supporters have maintained that he was a victim of an American witch hunt. The tribunal and this placing on trial of Charles Taylor was largely an initiative of the United States and Britain. The court was established in 2002 in partnership with the UN and Sierra Leone to prosecute those responsible for the atrocities in a conflict that led to almost half the population fleeing and left an estimated 50,000 dead. You know where I'm going with this, don't you? Like, the only interest this story has for me is the fact that one more war criminal has been brought to some kind of justice. Not really justice, but some kind of justice. At least he's not living high on the hog on book tours and taking somebody else's heart and having it placed in his chest so he can keep on living. You know who I'm referring to, don't you? The reason it caught my interest, of course, is wondering, you know, here the United States and Britain set up a war crimes tribunal to go after this guy. What about a war crimes tribunal for Bush and Cheney and the, at the time, Prime Minister of the UK? What about Tony Blair, Dick Cheney, George W. Bush? For what they did in Iraq. Did they chop off people's arms? No. They plastered cities with white phosphorus. They surrounded cities like Fallujah and pretty much declared them a free fire zone. So what's the difference? They used depleted uranium. They drove 2 million people into, turned them into external refugees, another couple of million internal refugees. Up to 1 million people were burned alive, killed, murdered, shot dead, blown to pieces. The whole country was destabilized. It is now run by foreign oil companies and the puppet government. So tell me the difference, somebody. What is the difference between Charles Taylor and George W. Bush? Anybody? Anybody? I'll take any answer.
Yes, for love, if it's love, it's changing, but I'm changing. The quality of mercy is
my strength.
Hypocrites and liars.
The quality of mercy is my strength.
Senators and lawyers.
The quality of mercy is my strength.
Victims and heroes.
The quality of mercy is my
murderers and martyrs.
the quality of mercy is not surrender.
Past the hour. Want to hear some more Republican sickness? I know you probably get tired of hearing this all the time, right? But these Republicans in this country, these right-wingers, they operate as much as they can under the radar. And a lot of the damage that they're doing to the United States, a lot of the damage that they're doing to our society, our culture, our country, a lot of the destruction that these Republicans are perpetrating against the United States is being done on a state level during the 2010 off-year elections when everybody was watching the Congress of the United States out in the elections of state legislatures and governors. The right-wing rats were scurrying about, lying through their teeth, getting these Tea Party fascist types elected. So many states went completely Republican in terms of the power in, you know, within their states, even though that is not the breakdown in the population. But all of a sudden, you have state after state after state that was run by these filthy cockroach Republicans, and they continue to do their destruction. The latest, of course, is this freak, Phil Bryant, who's a Republican governor of Mississippi. You thought the one before him was kind of bad? Boom. This guy is out of control. He is defending his decision to sign a bill that will shut down Mississippi's only clinic where a woman can go and have a therapeutic abortion. And he got on the radio with that crazy bastard Tony Perkins, yeah, him again, from the American something. It's about as American as Hitler was American. But right-wing evangelical Christian neo-fascist Tony Perkins yesterday. And this is what this useless piece of human offal said, the governor of Mississippi. He said that Democrats, quote, one mission in life is to abort children, end quote. The governor of Mississippi said, quoting, that the Democrats' one mission in life is to abort children. Son of a bitch. He said to the filthy Tony Perkins, he said, quote, even if you believe in abortion? Oh, my God. Even if you believe in abortion, this freak said, the hypocrisy of the left that now tried to kill this bill that says that I should never have signed it. The true hypocrisy is that their one mission in life is to abort children, is to kill children in the womb. Kill children in the womb. That is the one mission of Democrats? This sick son of a bitch is a governor? This putrid lump of human anatomy is a governor? He went on to say, it doesn't really matter. They don't care if the mother's life is in jeopardy, that if something goes wrong, that a doctor can't admit them to a local hospital, that he's not even board certified. I have no idea what that means. If we lived in a rational society, if Mississippi were even 10% rational, if a woman sought, for whatever reason, the privacy of a consultation with her physician and decided to terminate a pregnancy, she could go to a hospital and the procedure would be taken care of. And she wouldn't be told, oh, you just murdered a child in your womb, bitch, murderous, scum. Really? The bill in question that he's about to sign requires that all physicians who perform abortions in Mississippi have admitting privileges at the local hospital and be board certified in obstetrics and gynecology. While all of the physicians at the one clinic in the state are currently board certified OBGYNs, only one of them has admitting privileges at a local hospital. The other two physicians can't get privileges because they live out of state. And the owner of the clinic has said it can't operate with only one doctor on staff. Why do they live out of state? Because they fear for their lives. That's why. Because you have a piece of offal like Governor Phil Bryant telling this right-wing religious nut, Tony Perkins, that the only objective in the lives of Democrats is to kill children. Wow. Now, that wasn't enough. That wasn't enough. Following the statement by this lump, this Phil Bryant, Tony Perkins said, quote, well, the driving factor is profit for many of them. Profit in killing children. You sick sons of bitches. Tony Perkins, there is a play. Hold on a minute. Hello? Oh, hi, Satan. Yeah, this is... Yeah, I'm checking on the spot you have reserved for Tony Perkins. Perkins. Yeah, that's it. That's the guy. I don't think he's ready to come down there yet, but... Oh, you do have... You're holding a spot. Okay. Thank you, Satan. Later.
I've walked and I crawled on six crooked highways. I've stepped in the middle of seven side forests. I've been out in front of a dozen dead oceans. I've been 10,000 miles in the mouth of a graveyard. And it's a hard rain.
The Mike Malloy Show. All substance, no abuse.
I would not run from the Holocaust. I would not run from the bomb. I'd welcome the chance to meet my maker and fly into the sun.
25 before the hour. This hour is being sponsored by Alexandra Marin. Her message, I proudly sponsor this show to honor the incredible King of the Truth Seekers, Mike Malloy. Your Majesty. Oh, King of the Truth Seekers. Thank you very much, Alexandra. Do appreciate it. You know, a friend of mine said, why do you constantly bring up religion and go after them so vehemently? You know, you're going to piss off a lot of people. And my answer to that, of course, is if these religious people aren't already pissed off by the way their leaders are acting, then they're brain dead and they're following a religion that really sucks, that is poison. I don't care what the religion is. It's immaterial. But the reason I bring it up, and I'll repeat this again, I kind of believe in the John Lennon dictum, whatever gets you through the night. If somebody wants to believe this stuff, go ahead and believe it. It's not my place to tell you, and I never would, that you're crazy for believing something. It's when it gets into the political realm. That's when it becomes crazy. And I will identify it as such, as crazy. As ridiculous. But it was the politicians who dragged this out. The right-wing politicians who dragged out this religious nonsense into the political realm. The subtext being, if you don't vote for me, you're going to burn in hell. If you vote for a Democrat, you're voting for child murderers. So, yeah, I'm being very reactionary here. And I realize I am. And I know there are a lot of people who consider themselves Christians who don't subscribe to this evangelical garbage. Like the email I read at the beginning of this hour from Roz in Canada about the lessons of Jesus have nothing whatsoever to do with this slop that's being fed by evangelical Christians and Catholics to their brain-dead congregations. You know, what Jesus talked about was pretty basic stuff. And I certainly acknowledge that. I'm not here to be, you know, I don't have a degree in abnormal psychology or theology. And the two are very closely related as far as I'm concerned. I don't have anything to do with that. The focus of this program is political talk and the craziness that swirls out of this mess that the Republicans have produced. So that's the answer to the question. I've had people say, you know, you ought to just leave the topic of religion alone. Really? Why? It's being smashed into our faces every time we turn around by these political hacks. Mostly right-wing Republicans. I can't think of any Democrats who will tell you that if you don't vote for them, you're going to burn in hell. Or whose subtext is that? So that's the reason. And if you are a follower of Jesus, the man, the philosopher, or if you believe he was somehow a God creature, and you're following him, well, you know, that, like I said, whatever gets you through the night, that's none of my business. A person's religion is not my business. But when these morons drag up religion and fashion it into a club and start smashing everybody within arm's reach and then walking into the next room and smashing people over there and then going out on the front lawn and smashing people there, well, of course there's going to be a reaction from me. I'm not going to sit back and just quietly accept being told that I'm some kind of a freak because I don't believe this garbage that these right-wing evangelical Christians put out there, these Armageddonists, these Christian Reconstructionists, the rapture-ready psychopaths. Come on, are you kidding me? And this showdown in this country now between the Mormons and the evangelical Christians, this is going to be really cool. I mean, this is going to be funny as hell. There is, you know, it'll be so weird that they may even stop accusing Barack Obama of being of a faith different from what he claims to be himself. You know, he claims himself to be a Christian. Oh, he's a Muslim. Isn't it funny how they don't claim that he's a Jew or a Hindu? Why do they claim he's a Muslim? Well, the Muslim religion to these Christian evangelicals is from hell. It's demon-oriented. Didn't they attack our country? Well, if that's the case, why not go after the Shinto faith? Because a lot of these people believe that without provocation, the Japanese attacked us in 1942, I realize, or 1941. I realize for most of you that's a different era in history. But, I mean, come on. So that's why I talk about it, and that's why I shall not stop. I really won't. These people are crazy. You want the latest version? An Indiana school teacher. Indiana again. Every time I turn around, it's more craziness coming out of Indiana. What the hell is wrong up there? You know, I live in Georgia. It's very difficult for me, as a Georgia citizen, to say, what the hell is wrong with, and fill in the blank of a different state. You know, I live in Georgia. Jesus God, you know. I mean, we have little islands of sanity here. But for the most part, the state is just roiling madness. Religious, political, Republican, right wing. So it's difficult for me to say, what the hell is wrong with you people in Indiana? But the question is valid, given this story. An Indiana teacher who was fired from a Roman Catholic school for using in vitro fertilization to try to get pregnant. Emily Herks filed a lawsuit that accuses the Diocese of Fort Wayne, South Bend, and St. Vincent de Paul School in Fort Wayne of discrimination for her firing last June. She says that the church pastor told her, get this, you ready? The church pastor told her that she was, quote, a grave, immoral sinner, end quote, and that a scandal would erupt if anyone learned that she had undergone in vitro fertilization. What? A woman trying to get pregnant. What was the pregnancy for Mary, the father, a mother of Jesus? How did that happen, you priest freak? Was that a normal pregnancy? Well, it wasn't in vitro, Mike. No, it wasn't. It was some haint come flying out of the ozone and
I don't know, did something to Mary and got her pregnant. What would you have called that, Pastor? The Roman Catholic Church says IVF, no, 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 no. You can't do that. Doesn't in vitro literally mean, is that in glass? Is that what it means? Yeah. It involves mixing egg and sperm in a laboratory dish and transferring the resulting embryo into the womb. Oh! Oh! That's awful! Just a woman who wants to be a mother. I guess the church figures that her womb has been cursed, that there is demon seed around her womb, and that's why she can't get pregnant, and that that's God's will. And to do in vitro fertilization somehow is thwarting God. Ms. Herrick said she was fired despite exemplary performance reviews in her 8 years as a language arts teacher. Legal experts say her case illustrates a murky area in the debate over separation of church and state. Diocese officials said in a statement to the AP on Wednesday, yesterday, that the lawsuit challenges its rights as a religious institution, quote, to make religious-based decisions consistent with its religious standards on an impartial basis, end quote. You have a religion that says a man and a woman who want to have a baby and the science is available to have that baby, and that if they use the science to get pregnant and produce that baby, that they are somehow committing a grave, immoral act of sin? Are you out of your goddamn minds, every single one of you priest freaks? Listen, why don't you go bugger a little boy someplace and leave these adults alone? Isn't that what you do? You filth! No, I'm not suggesting you go bugger a boy. You don't need my suggestion to do that. You do that on your own! But that's okay! You know, that's okay! Your bishop will move you to a different church where you can bugger other children. But that's okay! Because it doesn't happen in a petri dish. You freaks. Oh, my God. The U.S. Supreme Court ruled unanimously in January that religious workers, and I guess Ms. Herx would be considered a religious worker, can't sue their employers for job discrimination because anti-discrimination laws allow for a ministerial exception. But the justices failed to define who was and who wasn't a religious employee. So based on that indecision on the part of the court, Emily Herx has filed a lawsuit accusing this diocese of discrimination for firing her. Discrimination? I would accuse them of I don't know, medieval insanity. If this woman is, as the church pastor said she was, a grave immoral sinner, I'm surprised they haven't started pounding a stake into the ground out behind the church and started gathering up straw and twigs and sticks and getting ready to burn her. For the hour, this hour has been sponsored by Alexandra Marin, and her message, I proudly sponsor the show to honor the incredible king of the truth seekers, Mike Malloy. Ooh.
Ooh, fancy talk. Thank you, Alexandra. Like I said earlier, I always consider myself to be a prince, but not necessarily a king. I'm just kidding. Thank you, Alexandra, very, very much. Back to, momentarily, Emily Herx, her lawsuit against the Diocese of Fort Wayne, South Bend, Indiana, and St. Vincent de Paul School in Fort Wayne for firing her last June. And the reason they fired her is because the priest at the church told her she was a grave immoral sinner, because she had used in vitro fertilization to try to get pregnant. Isn't that nice? A grave, immoral sinner. Emily Herx's attorney, Kathleen Delaney of Indianapolis, doesn't really think that she is a grave, immoral sinner. The attorney said she was not a religious teacher. She was not ordained. She was not required to and didn't have any religion teaching. She wasn't even instructed about the doctrine that she violated. End quote. The attorney. The attorney noted the ultimate decision now will be up to the courts. The school found, apparently, that Emily Herx was using IVF, in vitro fertilization, because she told them about it when she used sick days for the treatments. According to the lawsuit, school officials didn't indicate until later that there was a problem, the lawsuit says. The attorney would not say if Ms. Herx was able to get pregnant using IVF. The diocese said that teachers, even those such as Herx, who aren't Catholic, are required by their contracts to abide by Catholic tenets and, quote, serve as moral exemplars. Now, you know, it raises the question, how in the hell would this priest find out that this school teacher, this woman, had gone to have a treatment as private as in vitro fertilization with her physician? What does this priest do? Stick his nose under the door of examining rooms or treatment rooms to smell whatever he can smell? What kind of a freak is this guy, this priest? The Nazi Pope, as recently as February, Benedict the 16th, said infertile couples should not use in vitro fertilization or other forms of artificial procreation. Artificial? Okay. Which the church views as an affront to human dignity and the dignity of marriage. What? An affront to human dignity. A woman, and in this case, her husband, decide they would like to have il bambino or il bambina. And they, for whatever reason, maybe one of them suffers from some sort of physical ailment, or maybe there is something wrong in the delivery system of the sperm or the egg. Who knows? Does Pope Benedict know? Does the priest know? Didn't God invent in vitro fertilization for couples just like this? Or does the Pope and the priest feel that they know more about this than God? Uh-oh. Be careful, boys. Be careful. Hold on a minute. Hello, hell? Yes, Malloy again. Yeah, how's everything? Really? Pretty hot down there. Listen, I got a priest in Indiana. Oh, you know about him already? Uh-huh. Uh-huh. You're kidding. That soon? No, I won't say a word. All right, thank you. Talk to you later. You know, having a hotline to hell sometimes is very convenient. The church believes that procreation should be limited to marital sex. And that artificial procreation is an affront to human dignity. Anyway, Emily Hirsch's lawsuit, filed last Friday in U.S. District Court in Fort Wayne, alleges that the diocese violated the Civil Rights Act and the Americans with Disabilities Act by discriminating against Hirsch based on gender and on infertility, which is considered a disability. The Equal Employment Opportunity Commission upheld Hirsch's complaint in January. So the only recourse left to her was to go to court. Now, of course, the church in St. Vincent de Paul School in Fort Wayne and the Diocese of Fort Wayne South Bend will hire a religious fanatic attorney who will once again make the argument and probably succeed in making this argument that there is an assault on the church. Oh, my God, an assault on the church. And therefore, the court must rule that, yes, this woman was a grave immoral sinner for trying to get pregnant. Because to do otherwise would infringe on the right of the church to dictate any damn thing it wants to. Oh, sick, sick, sick. Brad Friedman will be filling in for me tomorrow. Thank you, Brad. I'll see you Monday. Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy.